Hello everyone, Purse here, it's your fave, and as always, I thank all of you listening in discovery, recovery, just learning, or somewhere in between. And today we'll be talking about echo chambers, groupthink, are you okay, and friends. And in the spirit of Blogmas, for any of you who don't know, I am doing between December 2nd and December 24th, 12 days of Blogmas, which means starting from the 2nd, every other day, or every 2 days, I will be posting a blog on my Medium account, which is medium.com/@PERS_@PERS_, if you want to check that out. And as it so happens, my post day for this week's Blogmas, one of which, because there's multiple, one of them is on the Wednesday. First one was on the Monday. Well, one of them was on the Monday. This one's on the Wednesday. So this episode correlates with that post, which is titled Are You Okay? And if you want, you can head over to my Medium profile and check that out. But today we will be talking about echo chambers, groupthink, agreeing with your friends, and what that has to do with your mental health. And why do I think this is important? Well, I think this is important because this whole topic is the reason why I didn't get help when I was very obviously in the depths of my depression and still climbing deep into it, and was feeling, okay, one thing, trigger warning, because I forgot, suicide for the most part, and pretty much only suicide. So if that's touchy subject, suicidal ideation, suicidal thoughts, general touching on suicide, this might not be the episode for you. I won't feel bad if you click off. Please join me next week's podcast, and also check out that Medium post that I was talking about, because that Medium post does not directly reference suicide. So that's a little way that you can access some of Purse's content this week if this episode is not great for you. So going forward, I will speak openly, and suicide may or may not slip out. But it was this whole concept and this whole phenomenon that kept me from seeking help when I needed it, in the depths of my depression, and also when I began feeling suicidal, and as I began feeling even more and more suicidal and ready to die. So basically, what is groupthink? For the first point, echo chambers make sense. Thoughts of friends make sense. You know, self-invalidation we're also going to talk about, but groupthink. Now, to me, the word sounds very Orwellian, and it immediately reminds me of 1984 by George Orwell, which is a phenomenal novel, and I would implore any of you to read it. But moving forward, groupthink in the context of what I'm talking about is basically just what a group of people think. You know, if you play oboe and you're going to a musicians collective and you're going to go do some impromptu recording with five other oboe players, the assumption is that the group think of that group is that playing the oboe is amazing. On the other hand, if you're in an anti-music hate group, I suppose, the group think of that group would be music of any kind, any genre, any decibel is terrible. So, That's my definition. For any of you who are wondering, what is groupthink and what is she talking about? And here's my issue and my experience with groupthink. And that's basically that I have a habit of finding people much like myself as friends, which is great until they start mirroring to me the things that I'm thinking. But the things that they're mirroring are things that I think that are not necessarily productive or safe. And what I'm mostly talking about are feelings of hopelessness, worthlessness, self-harm, suicidality, all those kinds of things. So basically, y'all know, I'm not going to go through the whole rundown of my breakdown chronology again, because I've done it many times, multiple episodes, multiple podcasts, especially in the podcasts most in the beginning. But y'all know that September of last year, September 2016, October, November of 2016 was around when I started not feeling so great about myself, not feeling so great about my life. I have multiple diagnoses, major depression, Major depression is one of them, and it was the beginning of a depressive episode, a very large depressive episode that lasted for about 6 or 7 months. Actually 7 or 8 months. But basically, I was just not feeling great. I didn't feel, it was my graduating year. I didn't feel like there's any point in graduating. I didn't feel like I accomplished a lot. I didn't feel like I earned, you know, the things that I did accomplish. I was second guessing myself because of issues in previous that I had with friends and family members, and questioning whether my decisions were right or wrong, and whether I could make right decisions, and whether I was moving forward correctly, and, you know, was there even a point in moving forward? And I started expressing these kinds of feelings, but very lightly, and it was always very comedic. I tend to lace what I'm going through, or not really lace, I tend to overload it with comedy and self-deprecation and, like, I want to die, but it's all cool, haha. So everyone thinks that it's like a meta joke. And it was, what also was really difficult was that being suicidal and being depressed and being down in the dumps seemed to become a very, very popular meme around that time, especially on Twitter, but on social media in general. And a lot of memes were like, you know, like, what would win? One misfiring neuron of serotonin, or like a great happy day with your puppy and your family? And like, everyone be like, haha, so funny. And I was like, no, actually, you know, I actually feel like that. I actually don't like my life and want to die. But the problem was, whenever I would express this, and I would express it in a sort of comedic, kind of jovial way, I would get the same response back. The same kind of response of like, yeah, this is pointless. Yeah, I hate this. Yeah, you know, exams are killing me. Oh my gosh, we should just end it all. And hearing these responses of not so much applause or praise, but just agreement, made me feel that, like, what I was feeling was normal, and what I was feeling was okay. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, I've been blessed so much that, for the most part, and for pretty much every part, every mental health professional that I've seen, or anyone that I've talked to about my mental health issues in my real life, although not every mental health professional has worked for me, anyone that I felt comfortable disclosing, you know, my mental health issues in my past and whatever to, have been supportive and accepting and ready to listen and ready to share their experience and ready for us to have a dialogue. On the other hand, it created situations where, you know, I would open up to a close friend and say, like, I'm not, like, I feel down in the dumps. I don't feel like there's a point in going forward. Like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, what's the point in living? And they would say, oh yeah, same, like, same. And I would go home and I would still feel terrible and think to myself, you know, everyone else feels like this, so obviously I'm okay, when I really wasn't okay. And now I can't speak for the people that I spoke to who responded to me in that way. You know, I can't tell you guys whether they had a mental health issue and we were both sugarcoating it so much that neither of us, like, not any of us could be real with each other, or whether they didn't have a mental health issue and they were just playing into the meme culture of the time, which was like, being suicidal is super meta and super cool, whereas, like, I was ready for death. But the point was, the way that it was expressed to me made me feel like everything that I was doing and everything that I was feeling and everything that I was saying was perfectly normal, and that it wasn't something that I need to get checked out. Now I realize that it was something that I need to get checked out, because while I was running around my house looking for the most lethal pills that I could take at a certain point in time, a good portion of those same friends who were like, yeah, you know, let's end it all right now, were living it up. and having their best lives, and it was a momentary release of frustration because they were bogged down by exams and, you know, deadlines, and the moments those deadlines passed, they felt better. Whereas with me, and I talk about this sometimes, especially with my anxiety, I always feel this sense of impending doom, this sense of like, nothing I'm doing is enough, nothing I'm doing is right, there's no point in doing it because it's not going to be perfect enough. If I start it now, there's no point because I'm going to find something better closer to the due date, so I might as well just not start it and like do closer to due date. And like, it's so much stress and it's a lot of anxiety, it's a lot of stress and a lot of fear and a lot of what's the point all mixed together. And I would watch, you know, my friends go through these feelings with that essay for that class that was really difficult for them, or that huge exam for that class that, you know, they didn't do the readings for, all these things, and they would feel stressed. Or, you know, they'd have work one day after school and a practice the other day after school and work again after school, and then the day after was the test, and like, what are they supposed to study? And I could relate to that mix of angsty, worried, fearful, but also what's the point kind of emotions. So I didn't think much of it until I realized that I would feel anxious and unhappy and worthless and fearful and stressed out to the point of nausea all the time. You know, it didn't go away after I finished that assignment that I was worrying about. I would just worry about something else. And it didn't go away during like winter break after the semester was over because I would just worry about the next semester. And then it wouldn't go away during the summer break when school was completely out because I'd just be worried about, you know, either my room was too messy or my job wasn't good enough. Or no matter what, it seems like I'll choose something to focus on and I'll worry about it, and it tends to be the most present task at hand, so the closest deadline that I have, and it will skew with the way that I want to attack that project or that deadline. It will make me push deadlines, it will make me, you know, miss deadlines, and I'll ignore it, or I'll try and just barrel through it, and then I'll have breakdowns and I'll start crying and I'll think like, this is going to be the worst thing ever, and then I finally get it done. And it really, if you were to take out all of the crying, all of the worrying, all the procrastinating, you know, all of the wasted time, and you were to just add together the time that I actually worked on the thing, it took less than probably 10 hours, you know, and yet I went three days overdue to hand it in. And I'd look at the thing, like the completed project, and I'd think, you know, this really only took less than half a day, like less than 12 hours. This was not terrible. And I'd hand it in. And I'll feel better for no less than a couple minutes and no more than a day. And that's being lucky. And then something else will come to mind, like next deadline, next essay, next test to study for, next job project to do. And the process will start all over again. And it's like this feeling of impending doom. And it's easier now because I see it and I can rationalize it and I can think, you know, I can think, remember last time, remember you felt this way about this thing last time, and it you got it done and it wasn't that terrible, you should just get it done now. And it's worked sometimes, but sometimes the feelings just get so bad and I feel, I feel so trapped, in my own mind, in my own body, in my own reluctance to get started out of fear of failure or wasted time or mismanagement, that I just don't get it done. And that was like me with the suicidality as well. I would look at everyone else and I would think, you know, well, that person is over it, and that person's over it, and that person says they want to end their life, and that person says, you know, whatever. It got so prevalent to the point, and part of it was that it was our graduating year, and everyone was not only tired of, you know, this semester, but they were tired of high school in general, and everyone was just over it. So it got to the point where, like, a literal metaphorical suicide pact was formed within pretty much a lot of people that I talked to at my school. Now, this wasn't to say we went to the forest at 7 o'clock on a Friday night every night or every week and like told ghost stories and planned the event and whatnot. Like, no, it was very much ironic. It was very much quote unquote, or it was very much supposed to be quote unquote a joke, although it's not funny, but I clung to it because it validated what I was feeling, which was worthless and suicidal. And when everyone else was like, yeah, I'm joining the suicide pact, yeah, I'm joining the suicide pact, I was like, okay, yeah, this is normal, everyone else is joining this too. Little did I realize that that was just everyone else's way to vent their frustrations for the monotony of high school and also like the stress of exams. Well, I was extremely serious. And that was really pointed out to me when a friend was telling me about like plans that they had in the summer or like a trip they wanted to take in late summer and how excited they were about it. And the thing was, like, you know, there were points in that depression where I could see past my graduation. I could see past my graduation, but it just looked bleak. It looked bleak, it looked uncertain, it looked pointless, it looked worthless. There are some people who are depressed and they can't see past a couple days like of their life because they're just like, I'm gonna end it. I don't see myself anywhere a year from now. I don't see myself anywhere a month from now. I just don't see myself. I could see myself through summer. I could see myself at my prom. I couldn't see myself at my prom. I didn't want to go for a good first half of the year. I just didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do a lot of things, didn't get my yearbook photos done, a lot of which were signs of me just like regressing into myself. But you know, I could see myself a year from then at the school that I'm at now. It didn't look favorable. It didn't look like it had a point. It was like, this is going to be another 4 years of the same thing, only to get to graduate school for 4 years of the same thing, only, you know. But then there were points when I, in the real, real depths of my depression, when I literally couldn't even see myself a year from then at the school that I'm at now, or a month from then. And if I could manage to place myself somewhere a month from then, I placed myself a month from then suffering emotionally the same way that I was suffering in that moment. So to hear a friend who had happily joined this quote-unquote ironic, I want to stress, do not do this seriously. If you're feeling suicidal or down in that way, please get help. But this ironic suicide sort of pact that was, you know, going around, to have them turn to me and say, like, I'm so excited for this thing that I'm doing in like 7 months. Alarm bells went off in my mind and I was like, 7 months? What do you mean 7 months? Like, we're in this pact. Like, we're doing this together. You, me, and the other 30 people I talk to every day who's ready to like end their lives. And they were so excited and they were so ready for it. And it was even like before exam season. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, you're not serious at all. And then throughout exam season and kind of like coming out of that, even starting like within the next semester or whatever, I would talk to people, and it would always, especially near the next semester, because that was also the final semester of high school and everything, it was less dark. First semester was very much like, oh my gosh, this is too stressful, this is too boring, this is too monotonous, like, let's do it, let's end it now, I'm in the pact, like, everyone was ready, ironically, you know, but that was the way of getting out their frustration. Nearing into second, or the next semester, it was very much an air of, like, whenever anyone would say it, it was more jovial, it was more like, yeah, the pact, let me know when we're ready to do it, everyone's ready to do it, but also I'm so excited to go to university or college or go into the workforce and leave this place. And the moment the tone got a little lighter and everyone got a little more, you know, a little more looking into the future, because it was after we applied to schools and people were starting to get acceptances and people were like seeing themselves outside of our high school, I realized that I was the only one that I knew of who was actually pretty serious about the whole PACT idea. And I was like, wow, you know, the messages that I had been receiving this whole time were not actually what people were trying to put out. Like, no one that I talked to expressly truly wanted to end their life. They just wanted to let out some frustration that they had with the stress of school, with it all ending and all the high stakes and everything. But I here was ready to drink the Kool-Aid and like be done with it. And that's why I think groupthink's really important, because I went a good couple months, thinking that everyone felt and thought and perceived the world the same way that I did, only to realize that I was the only one who thought and talked and perceived the world the way that I did at that time. Now that I've opened up my network and I've talked more, you know, I realize that I'm not the only one who thinks in specific ways, but at that time it was very much like a, what is wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? Why does no one else feel this way? Am I really the only one who feels this way? And is it okay to feel this way if no one else feels this way? And what made it even worse was I had a lot of issues with identity in that last year of school. I had issues with how I perceived myself in relationships, because I had burned a lot of bridges coming up to my 18th birthday. I burned a lot of bridges in my past, and I had always been one to think that I was in the right. And with the circumstances that I was in my final year, I started to consider, like, what if I was the one who caused my problems? What if I was the one who created the problems that I then had to fix? And what if I didn't go about fixing them in the right way? And that was something really heavy that sat with me, because I was always someone with conviction, and I still am. I was always someone who thought, like, this is how I feel and this is how I'm going to do it, and even if you don't agree with me, that's fine. I'm going to move forth my life and do what I want and whatever, whatever. And that was the first time I stopped and thought, you know, maybe you made the wrong decision, not only objectively but subjectively. Maybe you made the wrong decisions for you, and, you know, maybe you don't know how to make the right decisions for yourself. And how can you ever trust yourself to make a right decision if all of these decisions you've made in the past have culminated to make you less happy than you thought you would be at this point in your life? Further than that, I was having issues with coming to terms with just like other things that had happened way in my past, like in my early childhood, like traumatic things, abuse kind of thing, like all these kinds of things just came back, and I was dealing with them at once. And like home life, it was a lot. My final year of high school was a lot of me reflecting on the first 18 years, well, the first 17 years, because my birthday's mid-year, so the first 17 years of my life, and realizing that a lot of the things that I had experienced were not normal, and that part of the reason why I thought they were normal was because I somehow sought out and surrounded myself with people who, even if they didn't have the same kind of upbringing, hardships, trials and tribulations as I did, they presented themselves as though they were products of similar environments that I had grown up in. Or even if they weren't, and I knew they weren't, they presented themselves as though they thought and felt the same way that I did, and perceived the world the same way as I did, even if we came from different beginnings. And usually, even if we came from different beginnings, their beginnings were also tumultuous and stressful and, you know, a little chaotic. And I started to look around and I started to meet people who weren't a direct reflection of myself, or at least who there was no way for me to try and mirror myself through them and force myself to see them as a direct reflection of myself. And I started realizing that, you know, my think does not match the group. And it was the first time in my life that I started to realize, like, maybe I'm the problem. Maybe it's not the group that's not conforming to me, or not necessarily conforming. Maybe it's not the group's experience that doesn't reflect my experience, but maybe it's my experience that doesn't reflect the group's experience. And it tore me apart. And I did a lot of unsafe, rash, desperate, you know, things to hold on to a sense of, like, I am in control, I am normal, I'm capable of being normal, you know, all these different things, and they didn't work out. So not only did I feel othered by myself, like, not by my, well, I did feel by myself, but I othered myself. I made myself feel like an other, but I also felt like I had no control over my life. Because no matter what I tried to do, it seemed like the outcome would always be the opposite of what I actually wanted the outcome to be. So it was like, I can't even, like, shape my own world. The world is just moving around me and doing its own thing, and everything's predetermined no matter what I try and do. And not only is everything predetermined, but everything for me has been predetermined to be shitty. So that made me feel even worse. All of this is to say, you know, past 20 minutes I've been talking is to say, like, watch out for the people that you surround yourself with. Not to say that, you know, the person who's always like, haha, guys, ready to die, like, maybe they're like me, or at least like how I was at that time, and they're actually hurting, and they don't even realize they're hurting, and they think it's fine, and they're joking about it. Like, I'm not saying cut off all your friends who have negative or off-colored opinions or whatever. What I'm trying to say is, especially if you have very radical opinions, whether they're radically positive to the point where you're like, everything's great, like your arm could literally have just been sliced off and you're like, this is amazing, or radically negative, where like someone throws you an awesome surprise party and you're still like, death is doom and life is destruction. Like, if you feel those extremes of emotions and you feel like those extremes are affecting your life, and you look around at the people around you and you realize that the people around you are also echoing those same sentiments, stop and ask yourself, like, is what I'm thinking normal? Is what I'm doing normal? And is the fact that it's being reflected back onto me by my peers telling me that what I'm thinking, doing, and how I'm perceiving the world is normal? Or is what I'm thinking and doing and how I'm perceiving the world not normal? And one of the only reasons why I think it's normal is because I have surrounded myself with people who reflect these same sentiments back onto me. And those are two very different things, you know. And again, who's to say what is or isn't normal? Who's to say that your particular individual level of optimism or pessimism is optimal or not optimal or healthy or not healthy, aside from maybe like psychiatrist or something? But the whole point is, like, if you wake up every day and you're like, I would rather be dead, that's not normal. You know, that's not, that's something that can be fixed if you want to talk to someone or get on medications or change your lifestyle or change your environment. There's so many factors that go into making you feel like life isn't worth living. And sometimes, because we are the ones in it, it's hard for us to see what those factors are, or even if we have those factors, when we do have those factors. And another hard thing too is, like, it's one thing if you live an objectively comfortable life and you get placed into an objectively unfortunate situation. So, you know, you suddenly become homeless and your family's in dire financial straits and someone dies and, like, you know, your family becomes estranged, after having a really close, tight-knit family with, like, a stable housing, stable finances, and you've never experienced death in your life. Like, going from that sense of security to sense of instability, it might be really easy to pinpoint, like, oh, I'm not doing okay. Like, all of these things are coming down on me at once, and I'm not feeling it. Like, I'm not processing it in a productive way, and maybe I should talk to someone. Maybe I should talk to a friend or a parent or a counselor or a psychiatrist, you know. Feeling suicidal, feeling lethargic, feeling down, feeling unhappy, that's relatively easy to pinpoint. And those kinds of things comes from, you know, your environment. It could probably be safe to say that if you just were to magically get your old life back, you'd feel a lot better. But the problem is that's usually not the case. You usually don't go from financial ineptitude right back to financial stability, so you need to find other ways to rectify that. But on the other hand, if you're born into poverty or you're born into abuse and you're kind of destined to experience traumatic experiences that no longer are, you know, a list of warning signs or in children, or, you know, something that people scold, but it just becomes a fact of life, you know, the poverty or the instability, whether it's housing or relational or parental or between siblings or financial, you know, the chaos and whatnot in your life. When you're more or less born into that and you just kind of, like, grow up in certain tumultuous environments, those things become normalized to you. They become facts of life. And regardless of whether they get better or they get worse, depending on how worse they get, or usually if they just kind of stay the same, you will always view those events and events that you encounter in your life that are similar to those past events as just normal, as the way people act, you know? You grew up with screaming and yelling and breaking plates and throwing things, and then you grow up and you have a friend or you date someone or you watch a movie or you see something in passing where people are screaming and yelling and breaking and throwing things. And whereas, you know, most people would say that's not a productive way of processing your emotions, you look at that and you say, well, no, that's how people act. That's how people around me acted. That's how I learned that people react. That's just a fact of life. And because those are facts of life, and you know, you tend to grow up in these high-stakes, high-intensity environments, you don't always realize how those environments are negatively affecting you, because you don't necessarily know the positive emotions and positive effects that comes out of not being in those kinds of environments. And that makes it a little harder to distinguish between when you're not doing okay and when you're doing moderately fine to better, because usually coming out of those kinds of environments, your base level is usually in the threshold of not doing very okay, or just scraping by, or always anxious, or always on edge. So when you become more anxious, or more on edge, or more fearful, or more, you know, emotionally imbalanced, emotionally restrictive, or a little too emotionally open and attached, you know, those kinds of maladaptive behaviors that skew your life either super positively or super negatively, but generally super negatively, you don't really notice the dips or peaks because you're already in a sort of, like, how I talk about mental health and health and all these things are on a spectrum, you're already sort of on the outside of that spectrum. So you just get pushed more to the outside because you're already on the outside and you're already trying to adapt to terrible situations and in these states, you know, you don't notice that you're just going more off the deep end. So that's why I think it's always important to check who you're around. And my other point that I was making, there's a difference between normalizing something that isn't okay and convincing yourself that it's even more normal because you've somehow found a way, or you've somehow surrounded yourself by people with similar experiences and opinions and emotions that you have, compared to feeling that something you do or say is okay, and then just objectively getting responses that tell you that what you're thinking or feeling is okay. And it's true. I mean, if you grow up in the foster care system and you were, you know, adopted or fostered by a terrible family, abusive family, neglectful family, and then you didn't have a lot of resources, grew up maybe in a poor neighborhood, never really had a chance of getting to any great college or whatever, and you somehow fought your way into a job and you worked your way up, and now you're in kind of like a median position, and then you have a bunch of coworkers who are like, my dad paid for everything that I've ever wanted, and I never really had to work for anything, and my parents are together, and we have a great house, and the dog and white picket fence. Like, you probably don't want to hear those kinds of narratives over and over and over again. You're going to find the people who have dealt with addiction and have dealt with loss and have dealt with suffering and pain and, you know, working their way for things and having not hard knocks in life. So when you surround yourself with people who reflect your experience too much, especially if your experience is not an experience that is fair to have, to be born into, it's very easy to have that feedback that says, you know, the way you're perceiving the world is okay, when really the way you're perceiving the world would probably get better with a little bit of help and possibly medication and possibly change of mind frame and possibly change of environment and habits, compared to if you just walk up to someone you don't know, or you walk up to those people whose narratives don't match yours and you say, this is how I think and I feel. It can be a little patronizing to have someone look at you and think and say or express in with their body language and facial expressions, like, are you serious? But sometimes that kind of reaction is a wake-up call, an objective wake-up call for you to say, like, you know, people outside of my circle, sound-minded people who have lived a separate life than I have lived an objectively easier life than I have, if they look at me and say that the way I'm perceiving the world is probably a little not okay, maybe I should reassess this. And another story time during that time, and even a little bit before, when I was, you know, making those references to death and suicide and all these kinds of things, and I would tell people who weren't necessarily on board with the whole pact and on board with ending it all, and they're like, no, my life's pretty great, like, I don't want to end my life, like, of course exam season's a little stressful, but it's gonna go away, and then I'm gonna get to go to that party or go on that trip. Like, when I faced people like that, and I would say, kind of like as a joke, like, you know, I'm ready to end it all, and I'd look at them and I'd see their face, and they look at me and they say, like, are you okay? I would actually be a little taken aback. I would get a little taken aback because I would have to stop and think, am I okay? Especially because I would always express those feelings, again, in a very self-deprecating, kind of jovial, fun, handy-dandy Sesame Street sort of way. Like, all right, everybody, today's message is brought to you by the letter D for death. And then everyone's like, no, that's not funny. Like, are you in a good place, you know? And these were people that I'm really close with. These are people who didn't necessarily have a right or a reason to care to ask me, like, is everything okay in your home life? And they would. That would kind of stop me and make me think, like, oh no, like, is this too far? Am I making people uncomfortable because that's just who I am? Or am I making people uncomfortable because what I'm saying and feeling is not normal? What didn't help was those were the reactions that I got more so at the beginning of the year. But as time went on, more and more people jumped on that ironic metaphorical suicide pact train because just of the way that the school year goes. So I started feeling this false sense of security, or I guess false sense of insecurity and validation again, where I was like, oh no, yeah, it just took you all to see it for the light, But life sucks. But then again, you know, those things would pass and people would start getting their acceptance letters and they'd start getting excited for life again. And suicide pact, who I'm about to go to university. And that's again when I'd look around and I'd say, oh, you're supposed to stop feeling like this when you're no longer stressed. You're not supposed to feel like this when life is mellow and the seas are calm and you're just kind of going through your day-to-day activities. So that's very much why I implore everyone to stop for a second, take a look at the people they're surrounded by, double check to see if you've unconsciously surrounded yourself with people who have the same or similar narratives to you. And in that sense, they will always echo the same feelings that you are having back at you and make you feel secure in what could possibly be destructive, harmful, and deadly thought patterns, actions, and world perceptions. And I mean, I'm not saying you need to be best friends with the person who has a completely different life than you do. However, if you sit with them a couple times in class and you turn around and you like give them a softball, you know, and you're like, death and destruction, or I don't know, like, do you think it's like, do you, you know, when you think it's normal that this happens, or like, did this ever happen to you as a kid? Like, ha ha ha. And they look at you like they're horrified, you know, like, why would you even say that? Why would you even joke about that when that's a real reality, a real fact of your life? Anyone who's experienced, I'm being very vague because I don't want to get too deep in examples, but anyone who's experienced that of like saying something, and it not only was it like not received well, whereas like some of your friends would receive it well, and not only was it not like received neutrally, where someone's just like, ha ha, like, I mean, can see the humor in that, but also can't relate, but when literally the person who you're talking to can't see the humor in it, can't relate to what you're saying, is completely horrified at the words you just come out of your mouth, or the way you perceive the world, or the way that you talk to yourself, you know, your inner self or whatever, you know, and they just look at you like, is that really what you think? Like, is that really how you're feeling? Are you okay? Like, do I need to call someone? Like, you know how it feels to get that look or to get that sentiment. And I just, if you don't think anything's wrong and that happens to you multiple times a day, multiple times a week, even a couple times a month, and you still look in the mirror and you think, nah, nothing's wrong with me, they're just too happy-go-lucky, I would probably urge you just to talk to some neutral third party and say, listen, these are the kinds of things I say, these are the kinds of things I think, and this is the reaction I'm getting, and this is my, a little bit about my childhood. Do you think there's a problem here? Should we work through this? Because the last thing you want to do is surround your suicidal self with so many people that are so much like your suicidal self, or that you perceive to be so much like your suicidal self, that you wind up dead because you don't realize that there's any other perspective, outlook, or thought process out there. So that's this week's episode. It's a little deep, a little heavy. It's about groupthink, echo chambers, friends, and surrounding yourself with people who are like-minded to a fault. Yeah. As always, you can connect with me on all my social challenges, on all my social channels. Twitter is @PerseBorderline, @PERSBorderline. Instagram is @PerseBorderline, PERSBorderline. Anchor FM is PerseB Mental Health, PERSB Mental Health. Medium, did I say Medium? It's also PerseBorderline, website coming soon. There is a Tumblr, there is a Pinterest, so you can find it. All of the display pictures are the same. However, I don't really use the Tumblr or the Pinterest, so you can go find those at your own leisure, but I probably won't be on those. If you want to talk to me, privately, or you want to tell me something that you'd like me to feature on one of my blog posts or podcasts, let me know. You can message me on pretty much all of these channels. Again, I don't really check my Pinterest or my Insta or my Pinterest or my Tumblr. So Twitter and Instagram are probably the best places to get in touch with me. If you want to get in touch with me through audio, Anchor is the best place for that. My inboxes are open. Always love hearing from all of you lovelies. And today's question/comment is, not only just depressive feelings, although for me it was very much suicidal ideations and depressive emotions that I experienced, but whether it's like obsessive thoughts or, you know, intrusive thoughts that weren't necessarily suicidal, but like intrusive thoughts to harm yourself or others, all different, like, kind of, I'd say, like, deviant thought processes or actions, you know. Have you ever had those experiences where, like, you had a habit or a thought or a perception that was not only not normal or not socially acceptable, but you went to therapy and found out later that it was, like, harmful, like, not okay to think about? Have you ever had those situations where you had those thought processes and you had experienced the groupthink or the echo chamber effect where you found people like you and they relayed the messages that those kinds of behaviors and thought processes were okay until you expanded your groups and then you realized, oh wait, this is not okay? Or did you ever have those kinds of experiences where someone who could not relate and did not find what you were saying funny at all and they looked at you horrified? If you would like, please share that story. Let me know how it went, how you felt, what you did after it, if you took that reaction to heart and you went and got help, or if you looked at them and you're like, hi, you're wrong, and you didn't, and you kind of sat with it for a little while longer. Always remember to adequately content warn and trigger warn everything that you're posting, especially with this kinds of topics, especially within the mental health community, because you never know who you're triggering or who you're talking to. If you want to message me directly, of course, that's okay. If you want me to feature it or reference it somehow, let me know. If you want me to keep it private and just between us, definitely let me know. Mark it in multiple places in capital letters. Like, this is private. Do not mention it ever outside of this chat. And I promise you I will not. Thank you all so much for listening, my lovelies, in recovery, discovery, or anything in between. And as always, I will be here for you until the next podcast.